And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the Experience Hockey Talk, serious hockey talk for serious hockey fans. Michael here, and being joined once again for the second week in a row from the hockey writers in NWHL, Nate Oliver. Nate, welcome back, buddy.
Thanks, Michael. Glad to be here. It was always a pleasure.
Yeah, we'll explain why we were kicking ourselves in the butt last week, and we'll explain that in a moment. But real quick, also TXHT's Toronto Maple Leafs contributor, Steve Gardner.
Hey, how's it going? Glad to be back.
So it's the Three Stooges back together again. And we literally kicked ourselves because we recorded on a Wednesday, like we are this week. But we didn't release the episode till Saturday, which was the original plan. And then the very next morning, we had some news. And that is in the NWHL, the Boston Pride partnered up with the Boston Bruins for a women's hockey initiative. Nate, why don't you break down a little bit more about this initiative between the Boston Bruins and the Boston Pride?
For sure. So this is the Boston Pride are actually the fourth team in the NWHL to tie on with an NHL franchise, either in terms of a partnership, which is the case with the Metropolitan Rivers and the New Jersey Devils, and the Minnesota Whitecaps and the Minnesota Wild. And then in the instance in Buffalo here, we have Pegula Sports and Entertainment that own the Buffalo Sabres, as well as the Buffalo Bills of the NFL and the Buffalo Bandits of the National Lacrosse League. And they are owners outright of the Buffalo Buttes. So a beautiful partnership between the Boston Bruins and the Boston Pride. I think it was a long time coming, and it adds quite a bit of validation, further validation to the NWHL, and I think especially for the longtime Pride players, ones that have been in the league since the beginning of the NWHL. I'm thinking like Alyssa Gagliardi, Jordan Smelker, Jill Dempsey, you know, players like that. It kind of brings it full circle for them. I know Marissa and Jemmy had a really nice piece for the Boston Herald. Lo and behold, 18 years ago, Jill Dempsey, when she was 10 years old, helped the Boston Bruins named their mascot Blades. You know, she was a little kid involved in a contest for doing that. So really kind of a cool thing to see it come full circle like that for these players.
Yeah, and not only that, but they're doing the girls hockey clinics all across the Massachusetts area state, where it'll be like $100 registration fee. All the girls will get fully stocked with equipment, brand new equipment, like totaling up to like $500, I believe, from CCM. It was either CCM or Bauer. I can't remember.
Right.
But, you know, and it's from ages, I believe, what, 4 to 10
was? That's correct.
So, you know, it's just like how, you know, it is in Canada. You start them young. You know, you get them hooked on that game at a young age and, you know, you see this. And not only that, but Kelsey Colzer, a year ago, Mike Murphy helped unite Kelsey Colzer with one of her young fans who is now playing ice hockey because she sees someone like Kelsey Colzer. So seeing the Boston Bruins do this and bringing in the Boston Pride obviously is a great thing to help grow women's hockey, which is what we love to see because hockey is for everyone.
Yeah, most assuredly, and it's great. That's one of the things that's most special about the NWHL is that it's very tangible, especially for young players, young athletes, little kids, both boys and girls, that they can meet the players after the game. After a game, they can get in line for autographs. They can buy their apparel fairly easily. I mean, you know. Me, you know, I think back to when I was 10 years old, we're talking like late 80s, early 90s, and you just didn't have those opportunities to meet your favorite players for your hometown team after a game. And with the NWHL, it's the total opposite. The players, the women and the girls that are on each team are just spectacular with meeting their fans and interacting with them and being approachable. And that in itself will make the league grow. The other thing that I really like about it as well, too, is, you know, there's some people that criticize and say, well, you know, why do we need male athletes to help blossom the women's game? And, you know, for those that are true proponents of the women's game and followed it closely, whether you have the NWHL or not, no, you're not going to necessarily need that to win them over. They're going to follow the game naturally. But we're talking about other folks that are maybe on the borderline or maybe are a little unsure of what women's hockey is really all about. So if they can have some familiarity by, you know, their previous exposure to an NHL team, it'll help bridge the gap. So I think it's a win-win situation no matter how you look at it.
Yeah, and that's the thing, you know. Everyone needs a little bit of help to get that push, and you just can't go, like we were talking about before the show, like about how Twitter numbers and analytics and all that other stuff of how to push out what, like this podcast that we're doing right now, the articles that Steve and I write, the articles that you write, Nate. So you always need that little bit of a push, and sometimes partnering up with others is always a good thing to do. And especially right. The fact when someone who's much bigger takes that personal investment and wants to grow you. It makes it even more special.
Oh, yeah. It shows a sense of unity. And that, I think, hockey does better than any other sport, in my opinion, how it's able to permeate through different portions of the world and through different nationalities and different backgrounds and things like that, no matter where you come from, it's something that for the most part welcomes with open arms. So that just support across the board, whether it's NHL, NWHL, youth hockey, it's huge. And it's so important and imperative for the growth of this game.
Right. And then moving on to the action that took place this past weekend. On Saturday, you had two games. You had the Buffalo Buttes host the Metropolitan Riveters and take it to them 5-1 for a Buffalo Buttes win. And then the Boston Pride edged the Minnesota Whitecaps 5-4 at Warrior Ice Arena. Focusing more on the Buffalo Buttes game, because, Nate, I know you were there. What was some of the biggest things that you took out of that game between the Buttes and the Riveters?
Well, I can honestly say that was one of the most entertaining regular season games that I've ever gone to. I truly enjoyed it, and I think a lot of it was, you know, you have to keep in mind that the two teams had not faced each other since the Isabel Cup final in Newark last season when the Riveters won the Cup and dispelled Buffalo. So they hadn't seen each other since then, and for the most part, although, you know, obviously Buffalo has had a lot of major signing changes, and there's been some adjustments with that team exponentially. And the Riveters have had some of their fair share of new signings and new faces as well, too. But don't forget, there's a huge amount of the same players that played in that championship game and had developed some bad blood between those two teams. And what we saw this past weekend was that it was very much alive. For those who maybe didn't see the game, it ended up being Sarah Casarso's last game is a Buffalo Butte. An announcement came out on Twitter, and then there was a public address announcement actually at the game before puck drop that she was going to retire, and it was going to be the last game of her career. And Casarso, you know, here's a third-year Butte, was a member of the Isabel Cup-winning team, but she has had a long history of being in the trenches and in tough battles against the Riveters. I talked with her after the game, and we both kind of laughed about, you know, this is certainly not her first rough and tumble game against Metro. And it came out in the game. So at one point she actually ended up getting into a fight with Metro's Madison Packer. And you don't really think of fighting in women's hockey, but she had pinned Packer against the boards behind the one net, and Madison Packer got her in a headlock. And before you knew it, the gloves came off and some punches were exchanged. And I don't think people in the crowd realized at first, you know, what had transpired. They sent both players to the penalty box, and put 5 minutes up on the board. And then the next thing you knew, both were coming out of the penalty box and skating to their respective benches. And, Sarah Casarso, saluted the crowd and waved goodbye. And that was really her last moments as a professional hockey player. They both got game misconducts for fighting. So you know, not people might feel differently about being a proponent for fighting in the game or whatnot, but it was just the energy that came from that. And nice to see a great player like Casarso end her career out on top. But other than that,
Buffalo. I got to throw a real quick question, though, real quick.
Sure, of course.
It's your last game of your career. Would you want to score the game-winning goal, or would you want to go out with a fight?
Well, I think that's a good question.
And Steve, you can answer this one too.
But so in Casarso's case, she was one of the better offensive defenders for Buffalo in terms of setting up plays and generating a lot of assists. She was a lot more offensively gifted than I think what people realize. The funny thing is, she only ever scored one goal in her entire NWHL career, and it was an overtime winner in the semifinal last season in overtime to eliminate Boston. So I think she, too, it didn't really hit her until she got back to the locker room, and then a goaltender for the Buttes, Shannon Zabados, came in and said to her, "Buddy, you're a legend," and was kind of patting her on the back as, you know, the fans just erupted and really gave her a good send-off. So I think, you know, given the choice, you might not want to end your career on a fighting major, but it was a unique way to go, and certainly wasn't planned. It was just the way that it happened. Even Buttes head coach Cody McCormick said after the game, he'd seen that a couple of times in men's hockey, never in a women's hockey game before.
Steve, would you want your career ended with a game-winning goal or with a fight?
It would all depend on what kind of player I was. If I was more of a chippy kind of player who tried to help.
No, we don't care about that. We just want to get a straight answer, man. Come on now.
I'd rather fight somebody.
Oh, okay, so that's how you want to end your career?
Yeah. I'd have to win, though.
Oh, okay.
That'd be like the crap.
So if you lost the fight, you come back. No, that doesn't count. I got to fight one more time and make sure I win.
Yeah, so, basically.
All right. Me, I would probably, I was never known for a goal scorer, so I'd have to say for ice hockey wise, I was never known for a goal scorer. So I'd have to say the game winning goal simply because I've been in enough fights in ice hockey that I don't need another fight under my belt. So, but, going on with that, you mentioned she fought Madison Packer, as a result of this, has an automatic one game suspension.
Correct.
And Erica Ayala has done a couple tweets, and I'm actually trying to find them right now, because I have them up here in front of me. And I'm just going to read this these three tweets real quick by Erica. "Per my report of Madison Packer's suspension, the league has informed me the supplemental discipline was automatic one game for a fight. Still working to determine whether league has its own rule book, follows IIHF rules, NCAA rules, or any combination. There is a player safety committee in place led by Kelly Cook. When asked if committee findings would be made public as in the past, was told league will share suspensions issued but not report on all reviews. No announcement in the case of Madison Packer as of yet. The league also confirmed players and teams do have the right to challenge rulings." Nate, can I get your thoughts on that, and what are you expecting out of this?
Well, I think the one-game suspension is going to stick. I'm sure if Casarso hadn't retired, she would be in the same boat as well, too, and both players would be receiving a suspension. But in my opinion, I think that it's rather cut and dry. Although fighting can happen in women's hockey, like it did, it's not permissible. It is punishable by immediate ejection and suspension. So I would, even if they do try to appeal it, I have doubts whether the Riveters will actually go ahead and do it. They might just, you know, say it is what it is. But I think the suspension stands. In my opinion, having been there, witnessed it, I would say it's rather cut and dry.
All right. And then, on the 13th, you had one more game. You had the Minnesota Whitecaps taking on the Connecticut Whale at Terry Connors Ice Rink, which saw the Minnesota Whitecaps defeat the Connecticut Whale 4-1. Good bounce back win for the Whitecaps, wouldn't you agree, after a very tough one against Boston?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the great thing about that is, too, is that you know, you're looking at the two top teams in the league, and you know, I suppose you could throw Buffalo into that as well too. You know, consider the firepower that they have, but standings wise, it's the Pride and the Whitecaps at the top, and they're both going to be competing for home ice advantage and a bye in the first round. So the way that the playoffs are going to work is that whoever finishes first place in the NWHL, the five teams, will get a bye for the opening round. Team two will play team three, and team four will play team five, and then the winner of four and five will play the first place team. So who wouldn't want to have a bye for the first round and not have to worry about it? So, you know, they're right at the forefront. They're at the very top, and with the little amount of games that are left in the regular season, every win is so critical right now. And you might, if you suffer a loss, you might not be able to make up for it later. So great to see, and especially with the talent that both of those teams have as well too. I was looking at the Pride's team statistics earlier in the day, and of all their skaters that have played at least 9 games, there's only 2 that haven't scored a goal, and that's including defenders as well too. The Pride are getting scored by committee, and they're going to be very dangerous. I think the last time we were on together, I said, in my opinion, they're a dark horse, because everybody was talking about how good Buffalo and Minnesota were going to be. And I think people are a bit surprised with how solid and how challenging Boston has been this season.
Right. And then going on to the Connecticut Whale, there's some news surrounding them. Erica also reported that have heard and confirmed through multiple sources that Sam Walter is no longer with the Connecticut Whale. And then after that, Mike Murphy confirmed that Laura Brennan, who is the goalie coach for the Whale, has signed on to be the third goaltender for the team. Two-part yes. question to this. One, okay. What are your thoughts on Sam Walter leaving the Connecticut Whale? Two, with the recent retirements from the Buffalo Buttes and with Walter leaving, does it give you some concern about stability within the NWHL with some of these things happening mid-season?
Well, for the first question about Sam, I know Sam somewhat through social media. I know that she's involved with the Goalie Guild's Lift the Mask initiative, like a few of the other former and present NWHL goalies are. I can't say that I know why she parted ways with the team. Hopefully it's something that's a very positive move for her, and I wish her the best, because she is a very kind individual and a talented goalie. Unfortunately, we hardly get to see her play this season, and I wish she had more of an opportunity. She did get into a game in Buffalo when the Whale were in town, but other than that, didn't really get much of a chance to play. But with Miri Räisänen so strong, you know, an Olympian for Finland, being their main goaltender, it is very hard for another goalie to crack the lineup. And of course, with Maria Sorokina being traded to the Riveters, and with Walter leaving, you just have Laura Brennan and Räisänen now. So I guess it could open up the possibility that maybe they sign a new third goalie to join the team, so it's not just those two. Brennan was, of course, with the team last season. So, you know, it made sense that she would join them and be back. But you wonder, as they get ready for the playoffs, whether they bring in a third goalie. And then as to your other question about stability in the league, it kind of goes back to what we were saying earlier, is that the Connecticut Whale are the only team that have not partnered with an NHL team. And looking at it geographically, their options are rather limited. I mean, we would all love if the Hartford Whalers were still around, but it's just not the case. And with Boston naturally pairing with the Bruins naturally pairing with the Pride, you know, the options are kind of limited there. Going on the road, you know, Connecticut's homering Terry Connors, I won't go as far as calling it dilapidated, but it needs some tender love and care, and you'd want to see it for the fairness of the players and fairness of the league, that it would get maybe a makeover and be the same type of facilities that you see in Buffalo, that you see in Minnesota. So there could be some concern there in terms of disparity in the league, but I think my personal opinion is so much is made out of the founding four teams with Connecticut, Buffalo, Metro, and Boston. And I think the league will do a good job of supporting that. So if there was any cause for concern in talks of relocation or things like that, I think the league would step to the forefront and ensure that we keep a team in Connecticut. And it's only right. It's a good spot to be geographically, and I'm a bit of a traditionalist, and I wouldn't want to lose one of our original franchises.
Right. All right. And then last note on the NWHL, NWHL named their Veda Player of the Week, and that was Minnesota Whitecaps forward Amy Menke, who exploded for 2 goals and 3 assists this weekend for the Whitecaps. What can you say about Amy Menke, Nate, about her as a player?
Well, the thing I'll say first and foremost is that with Minnesota in general, they have so many scoring weapons, and not even just that, their goaltending with Amanda Levier and their defense, things like that. People forget, and I think it's because at least being on the Eastern Seaboard, we don't see them as often. They're more out Midwest, and they're maybe not as tangible or as reachable for us as some of the four teams that we've gotten used to, but. You know, Menke, here's a player. She's got 4 goals in 11 games. Her shooting accuracy is what stands out to me the most because she's only put 14 shots on net, and she's shooting at a 28.6 percentage, which is pretty lights out in terms of hockey. I mean, anything over 20 is incredibly accurate. And she's almost pushing 30 with her shooting percentage. So maybe, you know, she puts more shots on net, you're going to see some more goals out of her. But she's just one of many Whitecaps that are ever dangerous around the net. And, you know, that's going to bode well for them. It has bode well for them all season long, and it certainly will as they get into the playoffs. They have so many different offensive weapons that can put the puck in the net for them and win some games decisively.
Right. And then this weekend, if the computer wants to cooperate with me on this one, this Saturday, the 19th, you will have the Connecticut Whale visiting the Minnesota Whitecaps, which will be the Twitter game of the week at 6:30 p.m. Central Time, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. And then, if the computer cooperates with me, then on Sunday, the 20th, you have the Boston Pride at the Metropolitan Riveters at 2 p.m. Eastern, and then the Connecticut Whale visiting the Whitecaps for the second game of their back-to-back in Minnesota, which will be at 3 p.m. Eastern time. Both of those games, which you can watch live on YouTube via the NWHL website. So big things coming up this weekend for the NWHL, especially when you're on that stretch leading up to the NWHL All-Star Game down in Nashville. Nate, you going to Nashville?
No, unfortunately, I won't be heading down that way, but you know, you bring up a good point in terms of the placement of the game. Like, if you look up Minnesota's schedule, and of course, theirs is maybe a little bit more odd than the other four teams besides them because of where they are geographically. But these games that they have against Connecticut, then with the All-Star game in the mix, they don't play a regular season game afterwards until March when they're playing Boston. So more than a month, about a month. And a little bit more will have gone by before we'll see them in action again. And if I'm not mistaken, this is Connecticut's first trip out to Minnesota to play on the road. So it should be fun to watch regardless. But we'll see what damage either team can do before we end up hitting the All-Star break in February.
Yeah, and what was it? But the interesting thing, though, about the Minnesota Whitecaps is that even when there's a weekend when they're not playing in the NWHL, they're playing like the college teams, like Ohio State right. And stuff like that. So they are actually staying. They're not coming in rusty. They're staying competitive. They're staying, you know, in game shape, which I think is a major benefit to the Minnesota Whitecaps that I think they have over the other four teams in the league.
Oh, for sure. And it's something that they've done for quite a long time now. I mean, it's been quite a while since they have been associated with the CWHL or interacting with them at all. I mean, a number of seasons have gone by, and they had been, before coming to the NWHL this season, they were very much an independent team. And that was really, that consisted of the bulk of their games, either going overseas and playing games in Europe, playing college teams, like, as you had said, Michael, that they're doing now. You know, so I think it in some ways is kind of nice because they're sticking with a tradition that has helped them build their game and helped them be a quality hockey club for the past number of years. And it's part of the recipe for success. So if it's working and they're winning, and they're certainly winning here in the NWHL, just keep doing it.
Would you like to see other NWHL teams do that when they don't have games against their fellow NWHL teams?
I have mixed feelings about it. I know the Buttes did it a little bit this season. They played against the Colgate Red Raiders at Colgate, actually. So I think it's good in terms of conditioning and, you know, keeping up when they don't have a regular season game, just keeping their pace up and things like that. What concerns me about it is, one, you always worry about risk of injury. And although injury can happen at any time, in the long run, you're creating more opportunities when they're playing exhibition games like that a player could get injured. And especially as we're getting in the home stretch here up to the playoffs, the last thing you would want is seeing a player injured. I also worry about morale. Should you suffer, you know, you think of the players, and although they all did play NCAA hockey for the most part, you know, now they're playing on a professional team. And if you suffer a loss to an NCAA team, how much does that have an impact on them mentally? I'm sure it could be argued either way that it doesn't matter at all, or, you know, it could have a huge impact. But I'm more of the mindset that it could hinder them or put them in the wrong mindset pretty close to the playoffs. So I think I personally would be more leery of it.
Right. All right. Now we transition where we let Steve kind of take over a little bit, because we're going to start doing some crying on the show.
Yep, it's going to happen.
Do we have to?
I don't want to.
So for those wondering why we're going to start crying, the Capitals have had kind of a tough stretch. The Maple Leafs have had kind of a tough stretch. So instead of me kind of just babbling on about the Capitals, I'm allowing Steve and Nate to ask me questions about the Capitals. And then we'll be beating Steve to death about Jake Gardner a little bit.
Yeah, basically.
Sounds like fun.
Bring the tears. Oh, those salty, salty tears.
Well, that's actually good. Being in Buffalo, I don't get a chance to talk about the Caps all that much, so this would be fun.
Nate's happy about this.
Nate's just like, there's no video. We can't see what we're doing, but we could just hear Nate salivating in the background. Ooh, this is going to be juicy. It's like a steak just got put in front of him.
So, do you want me to kick it off?
Yeah, go for it.
All right. So, actually, I have a question about for you, Michael, about Alexander Ovechkin.
I might have an answer for you about Alexander Ovechkin.
I'm sure you do. But, you know, I was looking at his stats earlier in the day, and, you know, I know he's 33 years old, and he's hit 640 goals. He's already got 33 this season. You know, when, if at all, do we see his scoring touch begin to diminish?
That's actually a good question, because, you know, obviously the big question is that will Ovechkin catch Wayne Gretzky's goal record of 894? And the key thing to that is that Ovechkin's got 2 years left on his contract after this season. So looking at the Gretzky perspective, Ovechkin needs to score 50 goals each of these next three seasons, and then say he signs a three-year deal with the Capitals, which is what I kind of expect that he might do. Because I don't see him going to another team.
No, not a chance.
He would have to score 50 goals each of those three seasons to break Gretzky's record.
Right.
Or scores 50 goals this season and the next two seasons. The next one, he signs, like, say, a four-year contract, and he gets, I think my math was 30 goals a season for those four seasons.
Right.
And that's how he would break Gretzky's record. Now, as you asked, when does the scoring go down? I can't put a gauge on it, because it's so crazy to think about it, because you see what Ovechkin's doing right now. He's won the cup. He's enjoying the game. He's just scoring. Well, he was scoring goals left and right for a while. Now he's kind of in his little before the All-Star break rut. But I think it really depends. You know, it depends on how he's been the one who's been able to score all these goals in an era where goal scoring was pretty hard to do.
Right.
And he's always been able to find ways to evolve to be able to still continue to score. I think when it comes to that point where he can't adapt or evolve his game, I think that's when you see his goal scoring production go down.
Yeah. Okay.
Either that or some serious injury.
Sure.
I don't want the serious injury, so I'm going to go with the failure to adapt, slash be able to evolve with the game as the game continues to evolve.
Okay. And I'll follow up with a second question for you, Mike. I'll let Steve take over after that. But one, as I said, you know, I don't get to see the Caps all that often in person, being in Buffalo, but one player I really like for them is Christian Juice on the back end. And I know, like, last season was really his rookie season in the league when they won the cup, and he played a few years with Hershey before that. But, you know, a player like that kind of tied on, is there any prospect or younger player that you're particularly excited about, either that's on the Caps now or in the system?
So right now, Christian Juice is actually out with that thigh surgery.
Okay.
So he isn't playing right now. He hasn't played, I think, in at least 20 games now. Because of the surgery, but he has started to do some light skating, which is good. But he's still expected to be out for a while. Right now, the Caps are rotating between Madison Bowie, who was also a rookie last season, along with Jews. And this season, and now he's rotating with Jonas Siegenthaler, who's one of the Caps prospects.
Okay.
Siegenthaler actually, in last night's routing by Nashville, was actually the most impressive player out there on the ice for the Capitals, because even though the Caps were losing 7-1, he was playing Philip Forsberg man-on-man on a penalty kill. And he was making it hell for Philip Forsberg. And
wow.
And he has reach, you know, to really poke the puck off your stick and take away passing lanes and stuff like that. So I really like Jonas Siegenthaler. I think if Jews can get healthy, Madison Bowie could be trade bait as a result of that. And in the pipeline, you got, you know, Ryan Johansson's little brother, Lucas, who the Capitals drafted. So, you know, he's coming down the pipeline. I don't have the full list of prospects. Actually, I do have the full list of prospects as I go to the trusty Hockey News yearbook, which is properly put onto the Capitals. Lucas Johansson is obviously the top prospect after Jonas Siegenthaler. And then Tobias Geiser. He's a 19-year-old kid. I think he might have turned 20, but he's a few seasons away. We're looking at him maybe around 22, 23 season. And then obviously you got Alexander Alexiev, the Caps first round pick in last season, right, in last summer's draft. So, I mean, you got a couple guys. Alexiev will be a while. Geiser will be a while. Siegenthaler is, I think he's the now. I think he's earned that spot now. Lucas Johansson maybe has at least another year before he maybe makes it up. So you're probably looking at 2021 season.
Okay.
For him. So, I mean, yeah, but I think when Juice gets healthy and you know Juice is all right game-wise, I think you could possibly move Madison Bowie and keep Jonas Siegenthaler up, especially the fact that Brooks Orpik hinted that this would probably be his last season.
Makes sense.
So
cool. Thank you.
You're welcome. See, look, wow, this is so weird. We're like thanking and you're welcoming each other on the show. This is
I'm trying to end this.
This is too civilized.
The parade of tears. The parade of tears that was previously mentioned.
I'm going to bring the tears back up, though. So.
I hate you so much, Steve. I'm giving you one star for that.
So my question for you is, okay, so with the trade deadline coming up, what do you think the Caps need the most?
A swift kick in the butt?
That would be my number one choice.
Yeah, that would be my number one choice after what I had to suffer for last night and the night before. But honestly, the Caps only have $1 million in cap space.
Mm.
So if the Caps are going to do any trades, and Brian McClellan actually said this over the weekend in his one-on-one with Mike Vogel for WashingtonCaps.com, and that is, if he's going to do any trades at the trade deadline, it's going to be player for player, salary for salary.
Mm.
And right now there's only one guy on the board who is potentially being moved, and that's Andre Burakovsky.
And it's really interesting because his name has been floating around a lot with the LA Kings.
Well, honestly, I think the best place for him would not be LA, although LA could use him because they need speed out there because they're a very, very slow team. But the thing is that the place that he really needs to go to reinvigorate his career, which is weird saying because he's 23 years old. God, we feel old now just saying that one statement. is Edmonton. And it's because who was Andre Burakovsky's center on the Erie Otters in juniors?
Connor McDavid.
Exactly. Now imagine putting those two back together.
Yeah, but
that could fix some of the problems that Edmonton has with their scoring.
It would be nice for Washington because I'd be interested to see what they can get back. Because
the biggest talk is Jesse Puljujarvi.
Yeah, Edmonton's desperate.
Yeah, because I know Edmonton wants to get rid of Jesse Puljujarvi, although I think they're giving up on the kid a little bit too early.
Way too early.
But you know what? If you want to give up on the kid, we'll swap you Andre Burakovsky for Jesse Puljujarvi.
Yeah.
And we'll give Puljujarvi because Puljujarvi we can plug into our middle six.
Oh, yeah.
Easily.
And playing with Backstrom, he would have fun playing with Backstrom or...
Oh, heck, put him on a line. Like, the one thing I've always said about Burakovsky is that, you know, and I said this during the preseason when we did our Caps preview and I was breaking down all the lines of the Capitals. And the number one thing I said is that you don't want to break up the line of Brett Connolly, Lars Eller, and Andre Burakovsky.
Mm.
Because that is a line that works.
Yeah.
That line, you know, Burakovsky's weaknesses are overshadowed by Brett Connolly's strengths. Brett Connolly's weaknesses are overshadowed by Andre Burakovsky's strengths. You know, and same said with Lars Eller in the middle with the two of them. It works. He's not a top six guy.
No.
He's a bottom six guy.
And I think my worry is that, like, if that trade happens, you guys, like, I don't even care how Puljujarvi turns out. If he becomes a bottom six guy, you guys win that trade because everybody knows what they're getting in Burakovsky. Nobody's really, really sure exactly what Puljujarvi is because Edmonton sucks at developing.
Yeah, they haven't done very well with developing for a while now.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, do you want a good example of who does do the developing very well before they got rid of their general manager?
Who?
Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Ron Hextall went in with the game plan of, you know, wait a couple seasons. If they don't trade away all their prospects, which, you know, you hope they don't. Well, my case, because they're a division rival, you hope they do. But Philadelphia legitimately is going to be scary.
Yeah.
In the next 2 to 3 seasons. Because they got guys like Sam Moran. Carter Hart, you're getting a sample size of right now until they get their goaltenders healthy.
Yep.
You know, and they got young kids on offense, defense, goaltender. It's gonna be a scary team in the next 2 to 3 years.
It is. And everybody
but it's because Ron Hextall said, we're going to develop these kids. We're not going to force them.
Exactly. Another team who does a really good job of that is Chicago.
Chicago has so many bad salaries on their cap.
Exactly. That's all it is. But, like, they make that trade for Schmaltz to Arizona, pick up Strome, who the general manager makes me kind of laugh and was like, it's either you work with this player or you give up on him, and we think we're way past working with him. He's in Chicago and he's scoring up a storm. Like, it's ridiculous. He's back with the Brindig kid, his own line mate from from the OHL. Like, it's
these teams, sometimes they need that, and that's why I think Burakovsky to Edmonton with McDavid would be the best thing for Burakovsky.
It'd be an interesting play.
Because honestly, like you mentioned Los Angeles for Burakovsky. I don't see Burakovsky working out in LA because we're already seeing that Carl Hagelin was it Hagelin who got traded to LA?
Yeah.
Carl Hagelin's already on the trade block.
Yes.
And he got traded a couple months ago by Pittsburgh for Tanner Pearson.
Yeah, but Carl Hagelin is 32 years old and slowing down now.
Yeah.
So,
but he was they thought he was going to pick up the scoring for him because that's what he did in the playoffs and stuff.
Yeah, it's true.
So
it's true.
Tears of pain. All right, Steve-O, what else you got?
What do I have? So you were talking about Madison Bowie. Now, I remember him and Shabbat were the top pairing on the juniors for Team Canada 1 year. Like, what are your thoughts on him? Is he something special, or is he just, like, nothing that everybody thought he was?
I think there's something to Madison Bowie.
Okay.
It's just a matter of Madison Bowie trying to figure out where it is.
Mm.
Because he's under the knowledge tree of Brooks Orpik, which is great. It's been, like, Brooks Orpik, I mean, people can say what they want about him. Madison Bowie wouldn't be where he is right now. Christian Jews wouldn't be where he is right now before the injury. Jonas Siegenthaler wouldn't be where he is right now if they were not paired with Brooks Orpik during their rookie seasons. The big problem, though, with Bowie is that he's taken a lot of bad penalties, especially in the defensive zone. And that's one of the things that if he can curtail those really bad penalties, you got yourself a pretty solid defenseman.
Yeah.
And he's not going to be...
So that's always been the knock on Bowie, though. Bowie takes dumb penalties in his own zone.
Yeah, and I think if he can knock out the bad penalties and clean up his game, he'll be a solid defenseman. But at the same time, like I mentioned, Jonas Siegenthaler is giving Bowie a run for his money. Last night was supposed to be Bowie's night back into the lineup, but Siegenthaler played himself back into that spot.
Yeah.
And he had a hell of a game last night, too. Even though the Caps were destroyed.
It's true. And I've watched Siegenthaler play a couple times, and he looks really good. He looks like he's ready to stay.
Yeah, and he's also bigger
than Bowie.
He's a bigger defenseman than Bowie is. So. And he got his first goal before Bowie did, and Bowie, I think Bowie's still fighting for his first goal.
He is still fighting for his first goal. But Bowie was never really known for his offense.
So.
That was always Shabbat's role when he played with him.
Yeah. We'll talk about Ottawa another day.
Yeah, let's not, please.
Because we're going to talk about Toronto now. So in a text message to me the other night, you dared me to ask you about Jake Gardner.
Oh, yes. The good old Gardner.
How's Jake Gardner, buddy?
He's had a rough couple of weeks.
Haven't we all?
Seriously. So the last, I want to say 2-3 games, he's basically gave the puck to the other team, which led to goals, game-winning goals consecutively. He did it against Boston. He did it the other night against Colorado, to the point where the fans booed him every time he touched the puck in the third period and then off the ice. It was quite interesting. A few of my buddies, we were talking about him and we were like, well, we don't think he's going to resign. He gives away the puck too much and stuff like that. And then like I started to see a lot of the stuff happening on social media, and it's kind of ridiculous. Leaf fans get the rap as the worst fans in the world. Sometimes I agree.
So, can I throw something out there for you, Steve?
Go ahead.
because I know you're crying eternally right now. Carlo Colaiacovo, yes. Former NHL player, former Maple Leaf, mm-hmm. Posted up a video of Drew Doughty getting undressed yes. by a Pittsburgh Penguin, number 14, which I believe is Sheehan.
Yes, it is.
And he goes, "This is Drew Doughty, one of the best D-men in the league. Do you think mm-hmm. he gets booed or gets traded for making the same mistake Jake Gardner made? No. All great players make the same mistakes. People need to take the good with the bad when it comes to Jake. He is a good D-man." Yeah. That's Carlo Colaiacovo, retired yep. NHL player. And then somebody, it was either that or on Colaiacovo's page. Oh, here you go. So where was it? Oh, somebody did this. Just to add to this, giveaways this year. Drew yep. Doughty, 73.
Yes.
Jake Gardner, 42.
Yep.
And then
yep.
also throw this out there, a list of some Maple Leafs players who felt the heat from the fans at ACC Scotiabank Arena other than Jake Gardner. Brian McCabe.
Yep.
Andrew Raycroft.
Yep.
Hal Gill.
Yep.
Aki Berg.
Yep.
Mike Komisarek.
Yep.
Larry Murphy, who won Stanley Cups after he left the Toronto Maple Leafs.
With Pittsburgh, by the way.
yep. And then with Detroit.
Yep.
Dion Phaneuf.
Yep.
Jonathan Bernier.
Yep.
James Reimer. Vesa Toscala. Phil Kessel, who ended up winning two Stanley Cups.
Yep.
And David Clarkson, who I don't even think played a freaking game for them.
Basically.
so when you look at it from that perspective
yep.
about with Gardner compared to, say, a Drew Doughty, do you think the fans, and you, I know you're one of them, yeah. are justified in wanting to boo Jake Gardner out of the arena?
Absolutely not. I think it's actually ridiculous. So I took some time today in preparation because I knew you were going to take me up on the offer of this.
The challenge.
I knew you were going to take it up. And so I went to look exactly up, like, what were the turnover differentials this year? So like you said, Drew Doughty has 73 turnovers, but he only has 10 takeaways. So he's a minus 63. Jake Gardner does not fall into play until out of the top 100 when it comes to differential, and he sits at 21, minus 21. That is on par with every offensive defenseman in the league, almost. Shabbat's up there. Nikita Zaitsev, who nobody seems to want to rag on, but the guy can't handle a puck, and he makes $4.25 million a season. And he's a minus 42 when it comes to differential. Gardner, everybody keeps talking about the 2011 playoffs, and then everybody keeps talking about the Bruins and Game 7 exits, and everybody forgets that there were two players who showed up to play that whole series against Boston, Jake Gardner and Mitch Marner, the only two players who are willing to take a hit from Zdeno Chara, the only two players who are willing to take beatdowns from every other big, huge forward like Marchand and Bergeron. Everybody else, including Austin Matthews, cowered away in the corner. And, like, don't get me wrong here, Jake Gardner is one of those defensemen who is going to skate around, he's going to give the puck away at times, he's going to frustrate you. But the difference is that you're not going to find another 50 to 60 point D-man on the market who doesn't do those things. It's when Jake Gardner's contract ends and the Leafs decide not to resign him, somebody is going to run and jump at that, and he probably won't win Stanley Cup somewhere else. Because these are the type of defensemen that everybody's looking for now. Everybody wants this, somebody who can carry the puck into the zone. Now, the Leafs have sucked with putting a partner together with him, I think. But, like, look at everybody else they've signed. They overpaid Phaneuf, which then everybody was like, oh, Phaneuf sucks. Well, Phaneuf, actually, if you look at a lot of the stats, he really didn't suck. It was more of he wasn't worth $8 million a season. And Phil Kessel did exactly what everybody was told he was going to do, score goals. And Hal Gill did everything he was supposed to do. He was perfect on the penalty kill with his stick and his blocking shots and everything. And then The same thing with James Reimer. I think James Reimer got it the worst because people started attacking his wife on Twitter.
No bueno, man. No bueno.
Yeah, like, it's getting really out of hand. And if you watched the interview, I'll make a tweet later about the interview with Jake Gardner. He literally, at the end, starts to get emotional when they ask him about being booed off the ice. So, like, he cares what he did. He knows what he did. And he knows he has to be better. And he doesn't need every fan in the arena to start telling him every time he touches the puck that he does this. It's out of hand. And I think sometimes fans, or whatever you would call them, because in Toronto,
fans
you can't,
with air quotes.
Yeah, because you can't, in Toronto, you can't afford to go to a Leafs game. Like, if you're like a fan who's on a normal income, you can't afford to go to a Leafs game. That's the way it works. And so, like, you have a lot of guys who show up there who are in, like, doing business or just have, you know, buy season tickets and share it or whatever, and they're not really the fans that are committed to the team. They show up every once in a while, they watch it every once in a while, and then they see certain things with Jake Gardner and they, whatever, make comments. But I think the real issue here is that you're not going to find anybody else. Like, people talked about Parayko earlier in the season, about the Leafs acquiring Parayko when Nylander was holding out. Parayko is in the top 20 for giveaways, and St. Louis is having a hard time handling contract issues with him because they're just like, you're not worth what we're paying you because you're giving the puck away all the time. And so it's like, this is constant. Thomas Chabot is, what, top three in scoring? And he has, like, he's minus 31. He has, like, 56 giveaways. This is a normal thing. Brett Burns is minus 21. Like, this is a normal process for a defenseman who thinks more offensively minded. And so, for people who understand that process, they get it and they backed up Jake Gardner. His teammates backed him up and then took a lot of flack on Twitter about it.
You got to love all these keyboard warriors.
It's really funny.
It's like we see it in the Facebook groups we're in. We see it with Twitter about how, you know, people just want to talk this strong game. And I remember taking it to the Caps real quick, somebody was going after Copley in one of these Caps fan groups that I'm in on Facebook. And the first thing, one guy came out and said, you know, you should really be quiet because yesterday, you know, Copley was being faced with like multiple breakaways and odd man rushes.
Yeah.
He ain't going to stop all those shots. It ain't going to happen. It's impossible. Which then I chimed in going, because I played goalie for 4 years. Yeah, it is really tough. You try doing it. And then open your mouth about it.
Yeah.
You know, and of course that shut the person up, but, you know, it's like there's just so many keyboard warriors out there that it creates the atmosphere, or it makes the atmosphere so toxic before it, you know, they even get a chance.
Yeah. And, like, Jake has been here through, let me see now, he's 28, first joined the Leafs when he was 21, I believe. From a trade from Anaheim. And, like, he's played under so many different regimes that have taught him so many bad habits that Babcock had to break out of him, that he's been a tremendously more responsible defenseman since he's been here. His points have come down a little bit from 60 to about 55, 54 a season, but, like, he's made up for it in the way he's played in his own end. But, like, every once in a while, just like every other defenseman who plays in the NHL, they make a gaffe that leads to a goal. Like, it happens. There's nobody who's exempt from it. And I think when you're sitting in Toronto and these fans think they have the right to make comments and say things that are a lot of terrible things on Twitter, it's not just like, oh, he sucks. Who cares? That's your opinion. You can be an armchair GM if you want to. But, like, comments about, like, other things that are just totally inappropriate, especially when it comes to family, and like anything else that has to do with his personal life. It's just, it's ridiculous, and it's like out of hand. And that's, for some reason, that's the way the Leafs fans start to attack when they don't like you.
Well, I want to jump on that because you brought up a good thing about the family thing. Isabel Krishirdian, who writes for the Washington Post, did a really good article about Tom Wilson. And Tom Wilson jumped off of Twitter during the postseason, but he kept his Instagram open.
Yeah.
And he ended up finding out through Instagram that somebody posted his family's address and told people to send the do whatever. And he literally called his parents and said, yeah, you might want to pay attention to what's coming in the mail.
Wow.
And that was during the playoffs, and I think that was during the Pittsburgh series.
Wow.
And it's like that there's a line, and you just can't do it.
Yeah. I want to say four or five years ago when Reimer was part of the Leafs, it was after the Game 7 where they were up 4-1 in the third, and the Bruins came back and won in overtime. There was this, like, backlash, and I, like, woke up to these tweets the next morning after crying myself to sleep. But I woke up to tweets the next morning of, like, people tweeting April Reimer, and I'm just going to say it because I think it's important that you understand what was being said. Like, there were comments like, you should give your husband a blowjob more times so he can play better. Or, are you sure your husband's a real man? Like, have you checked down below checked his pants when you were talking to him? And like stuff like that. And it's just way, way, way out there that you need to stop. You've crossed so many boundaries, so many lines. These people are actual people too, just like you. It's way out of hand.
Not the end of the world. It's just the game at the end of the day.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly.
Now let's get away from the negative and let's have a little bit of nerding out because we had a little bit of fun with that last week. So let's do it again this week.
Do it.
Steve.
Yes.
I'm sorry, but I have to accept your trade in Top Skate and give you 1 star.
Right. Oh, man.
It was a great trade, but 1 star. Like, so for those who don't know, Steve and I do this trading card app on our phones called Top Skate, which is an NHL trading card app. And yeah. I enjoy it. Steve enjoys it. I like building the sets. Steve, you do more Toronto collecting. I do Capitals collecting, but I do try to do a focus on full set building of all the teams and stuff like that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But one constant that we see is that, like, we'll be trying to help each other out, or others will help each other out, and it'll be like, oh, thanks for the good trade. 1 star.
Yep.
I think I have, like, a 4.75 rating on Skate and a near 5-star. No, correction. I have a near 5-star rating in Skate and a 4.75 rating on Top Slam, which is the WWE one.
Yeah.
So Steve, nerding out wise, what's your favorite card so far in Tops?
Ooh, let me see now.
And don't tell me the John Tavares that I pretty much got your soul on.
Yeah, ooh. Basically, yeah. That's the truth.
You're still trying to repay me for that card.
I would have to go with probably the Mitch Marner variant. I like it a lot.
Which one was the variant one again?
The signature series.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so the I like
that. I didn't help you with.
Yeah, it's okay. I'm still looking for it.
Yeah.
But that's.
So Nate, obviously not in Tops because you don't do it, but do you have any great favorite memorabilia that you got?
Oh, gosh, most certainly. I've been collecting hockey cards since the 80s. Probably my most prized one is the perfectly centered, mint condition, the greatest saber of them all, Gilbert Perreault, his rookie card from 70-71 tops that I delivered newspapers for and saved up my collecting to buy when I was probably about 12 years old. And then across that time, I've collected all three rookie cards for the French Connection. But in terms of the card that took me the longest to get is Tim Horton, and this was before eBay was around at all, but Tim Horton only played the final 2 years of his career with the Buffalo Sabres in the early 70s before he was tragically killed in a car accident. Mm. And there's actually only one card of him, an old Apeachy card from the 72-73 series of him in a Sabres uniform. Now, he did play... There is a Sabres issue card for 73-74 Apeachy of Tim Horton, but oddly enough, he's wearing a Pittsburgh Penguins jersey in the picture, so I don't really count that one. But the 72-73 Sabres one took me about 9 years to track down.
Wow. Wow.
And that's pre-eBay. Yeah, pre-smartphones.
Pre-eBay. I had to go to a sports card store and... the guy that was running at the time, it was an old mom-pop shop that's not even around in Buffalo anymore, and he happened to be going up to a card fair collector's site up in Toronto, and he stumbled across it, and he's like, he knew that I was collecting old Sabres cards at the time, and again, I was a kid, I was probably, at that point, I was maybe about 19, something like that, and he snagged it for me and brought it back. But yeah, I'd waited a very long time to track that one down. Cause you can't get Opeachy's at that time. You couldn't really get Opeachy in the United States. It was strictly Canadian. So it was tough to find. But
it's interesting because like I have a massive physical card collection too. And mine, you know, as I stare over at it, you know, in my other bookcase, it's all in boxes by team. And like, I have cards from, like, the 70s. Like, I'm 32. I was born in 86. So, like, me having cards from the 70s, some people may find it a little weird. But, you know, it's just how I was able to collect. But I remember the old NHL score sets from the early 90s?
Oh, yeah.
You had the American version, and then you also had the Canadian version, and then you had the American-Canadian version.
Yeah, it was a little hard to keep track of, and they were different colors, and sometimes different pictures, and
different even languages. Though it was the same,
that could be a little tricky at times.
Like I think I had like two Reggie Savage Capitals rookie cards from that set, and like one is in the American card, the other one is the Canadian card, which is in French.
Right, and isn't like one is the border of it is red, and like another one for is like blue, and there's a purple one.
Yeah, there is. Yeah. Exactly. It was like, what planet am I on? But physical wise, one of my top cards is obviously it's got to be Peter, one of my Peter Bonder cards. I can't remember off the top of my head which one. Obviously, I grew up a huge Peter Bonder fan.
Mm-hmm.
The game where he actually scored 5 goals against Tampa Bay.
I was crazy
at that game. I actually got the puck he shot over the boards during pregame warmups that game.
Wow.
So I actually have that puck, that practice puck, or pregame puck from that game.
That's awesome.
Like 94.
That's so cool.
I mean, obviously, I'm a big proponent of the women's game, and probably the most prized memorabilia possession that I have was Jenny Hurikoski. She's the captain for Luleå, and she's a 6-time world champion bronze medalist for Finland and a 2-time Olympic bronze medalist for Finland, and arguably the best defender for women's hockey ever. Well, I did an interview with her when Luleå played the Riveters at Princeton, and she totally surprised me and gave me one of her game-worn jerseys, just shocked me out of the blue, and I was absolutely floored.
That's really cool.
That's so cool.
What about you, Steve? What do you have physically?
Awesome. I do a lot of collection of Leafs, so like,
I'm so sorry to hear that. I mean,
it's bad. I think my most prized possession though is, so I grew up a huge Doug Gilmour fan. Being born in 85, I got to watch a lot of him. So basically I think I have a Doug Gilmour rookie card, and I got it signed when he was down at Real Sports here in Toronto. And so it's like cased away, hidden away in like 18 different boxes so that I can't destroy it ever.
Steve, correct me if I'm wrong. He was with the Blues for his rookie card, right?
He was, yeah.
Wow.
So wow. It's pretty awesome. He's the only player I collect from every team. So I have him in a Calgary jersey, St. Louis, Toronto, New Jersey, I believe, for a year.
Buffalo,
yes. Montreal. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I remember talking about rookies with the Blues. Adam Oates.
Yeah.
I was at the National Card Show. And it happened to be in Baltimore, Maryland that year. And so I went with my friend Donald, and he gave me this piece of paper, and he said, "This is what I'm looking for." And he writes down Adam Oates, the year he was a rookie, St. Louis Blues, specific type of set, all this other stuff. And he said, "Go to this specific dealer." And I'm like, "Okay, I can do that." Couldn't find the dealer.
Wow.
And like, so I was like, "Here, why don't you have him?" Like, I don't know where this guy is. I've been looking everywhere. I can't find him. Wow. If you've ever been to the Baltimore Convention Center, I've been there for like anime conventions and stuff like that. And when you're there for the anime conventions, that actual showroom floor, they have it broken into three different spots. Exhibitors Hall, the Artist Alley, and the Concert Hall. So they actually have it broken down. Wow. Those walls that break it down are open. So you're walking through the full convention center at that point. So it's like, for me, it's like, oh, wow, this is completely different compared to how I'm usually in here.
Wow.
So, and that's why I got lost. If it was like set up the way like Otakon was when they were there, I probably would have found the guy pretty damn fast.
Yeah.
But I did snag like a couple $100 worth of really cool cards. And unfortunately, I came the day after Gordie Howe was there.
Oh, wow.
So I was like, damn. That
sucks.
That would have been cool to meet Gordie Howe.
Yeah.
For sure.
But, all right, gents, we nerded. We're going to do this again soon.
Yes.
Without the fetal position this time, Steve.
No more tears.
Well, here's the thing. When we get to the NHL All-Star break, which will be after next weekend, both the Capitals and the Maple Leafs are going to be in their bye weeks. Okay. We're going to be bored.
Yeah.
So it's like, what is it? The Capitals, they play. Yes, I know. I still want to read that wrestling article. I'll read it later. Hey, it's what I was doing before we started recording. I mean, I am recording a wrestling podcast tomorrow. So the Capitals play the New York Islanders this Friday, which I will be at the game with Dixon. If anyone wants to come see me and talk to me about TXHT and Capitals or whatever, you can find me because I'll be wearing my Kicking Ice jersey, Kicking Ice, which of course promotes the graphic novel of the said name, Kicking Ice, written by Stephanie Phillips, which I've not read yet. I got my copy, but I haven't read it yet. Then on Sunday, the Capitals play Chicago at 12:30 p.m. Eastern on NBC. Then on Tuesday, the Cavs play San Jose. Then on Wednesday, they play Toronto at 7:30 p.m. Then they go into the All-Star break, and then they don't play again until February 1st at home against Calgary.
Ew.
Wow. So
that's it for the Capitals. Toronto, they play tomorrow, which is, well, at the time of release today, against Tampa Bay, then Friday against Florida, Saturday against Arizona, mm-hmm. Wednesday against the Capitals, and then they don't play again until February 1st against Detroit in Detroit.
Wow. Oh,
so we're going to be bored for a while. But at least we know our last game is against each other before we get to be bored for a week and a half.
Yay, and we're going to... Dang. I hate when the Leafs play the Capitals. Because Ovechkin scores 500 goals. It's
Oh, I thought it was because... I thought you loved when the Caps play the Maple Leafs because you love working with me when we write those recaps.
I do like that part. I don't like writing all the Washington goals, though. Like, it's just... It's so sad.
You got to take the good with the bad, I guess.
Here, I'm just going to pat the top of my laptop and imagine it's your shoulder, Steve, and just go, there, there, my dear child. All right, so with that, Nate, where can the people find you on social media?
Sure. Well, you can catch me on Twitter at any time at Nathaniel, N-A-T-H-A-N-I-E-L. The letter A for my middle initial, and Oliver, O-L-I-V-R, because they couldn't let me fit the E in there. So Nathaniel A. Oliver is my Twitter handle, and you can tune in to find out about the Buffalo Buttes and NWHL and women's hockey.
Steve?
Yes.
Darling?
Yes.
One star. Go.
You can catch me on Twitter at @Gardski. Come on, ask me some questions on Facebook, Steve Gardner. I would love to hear your comments.
I'm just going to heckle you instead.
Okay.
And of course, you can follow me at @TheLindenbaum75. And for everything TXHT, Steve's article, my articles, this podcast posting, everything that we do, Christopher Silas's, a.k.a. our buddy Shaggy, his Connecticut Whale articles, Dixon's dailies, which I don't think he did one today. Damn it, I got to go after Dixon now. all of that you can go get at txhthockey.com. Also, links to our Facebook and Twitter page are on there as well. And ladies and gentlemen, Steve, Nate, thanks again for coming on. We'll be doing this again soon, my friends. And yes, until next time, we will see you on the ice.